Vodka o'clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love and you are listening to Vodka O'Clock from AmberUnmasked.com. Don't forget that you can sponsor the show and the website at patreon.com/AmberUnmasked, and that's for as little as a dollar per week. What you will have today is not someone joining me in an interview. This is my last New York Comic Con panel. It was called In My Day, They Didn't Have Cosplay. And what that is, not to tell anybody that it's an anti-cosplay panel, it is actually a pro-cosplay panel. It was all about the history of costuming, bringing us up to where we are now, and just some of the things to, you know, that people think about. It was a very visual panel, so I hope that just hearing the audio is still okay, especially with the history of cosplay. There were a lot of cool pictures and photos and tears from old magazines and stuff like that that were projected. So I did take some of those pictures of their projector. If you go to the website and check out the show notes, if you're not listening to this directly through a streaming app. So the panelists were moderated, first of all, by Charles Battersby, who is probably the best moderator I've ever seen. He keeps people on topic. Nobody was interrupted. The visuals were great. It was like a very well put together panel. And I think Charles's skill at moderating had a lot to do with that. Steve Bunch, who's a former DC and Marvel editor, cosplayers Kat Smith and Alita Pardalis, and photographer Anna Fisher. So, as I said, you can, you know, please go check the show notes because I will have some extra photos there for you to look at. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Elizabeth Amber. If you have any questions, you can leave them in the comments. And I appreciate you listening. I appreciate everybody that's been going to Patreon and sponsoring the show because things have been going really well. So share those links. Tell your friends that you enjoy the show and the site and the type of coverage that I've been able to provide to you. So since it's November, I just want to give you a heads up. November is National Novel Writing Month. We abbreviate that as NaNoWriMo. And that means that the guests that I'll have will probably be talking about that. So it's not to exclude anybody creatively, but if we get nano-specific, it's just another process that has to do with writing. It's a lot of people have these how to write your novel in X number of weeks type of plans. So the fact that this is done communally, where you have a lot of support online, just kind of makes it more fun and you feel less alone doing it. So it's not that it's not adaptable to other types of writing styles. And some of the people that I have on, you know, will probably talk about how it didn't work for them at all. And that's a great thing to hear. I'm going to be, you know, trying it again this month. So hopefully I can make it. And, you know, I literally just finished editing the book from last year. So it took me that long to send the draft out to beta readers and get feedback and get all kinds of editing advice on it. So it did take me a whole year, and now I'm ready to start again. So I hope that you enjoy those episodes coming up. And now check out the cosplay panel.
This is In My Day, We Didn't Have Cosplay. And if you're old enough to get that Dana Carvey grumpy old man reference, then you're old like us grumpy old people up here. We're not going to spend the next hour whining about how these kids today don't know how good they got it. We're going to talk about the origins of cosplay, dating back to the early 20th century, and the different subcultures that have embraced cosplay throughout the 20th century, leading right up to the present. And we're going to talk about some of the futuristic technology that we have in the 21st century that wasn't available back when most of us started cosplay. I'm Charles Battersby. I'm known for my Princess Peach cosplay, my Catwoman cosplay, and I've been doing this for about 20 years. And when I am not cosplaying, I'm a playwright, an actor, and a video game.
Shoddy Cast!
Woo! As those of you who know Shoddy Cast in the Fallout lore series, I'm one of them. And let's meet our other panelists.
Hi, I'm Steve Rush, former Marvel editor, former DC and Vertigo editor, also just a self-proclaimed media ronin. But long story short, I got into the whole cosplay thing is because what's not to love? I mean, after people spend the time to craft all of this stuff and to just bring the energy to it. So, hey, I love it.
I'm Kat Smith. My title is Miss Nerd Styles, which I won because I made it up. I don't have to go to somebody else after a week, so there. I thought that I was mostly known for my River Song cosplay, and then I was wearing River to Thing, and people kept asking me if I was usually Cersei Lannister. So, go figure. When I'm Cersei, people ask me if I remember songs. So it's a thing. They always recognize you for what you're not wearing. When I am not cosplaying, I am probably being ridiculous with the ukulele somewhere, and like the way station or at cons, and I've been doing this for a day. I haven't even done the math on that one. A really, really long freaking time.
Amateur cosplay historian. There we go. You might have seen me around. I do about 26 conventions a year, so I will be seeing all of you pretty soon, I'm sure. Hit me up anytime.
Hello, my name is Alicia Pinales, and I'm probably best known for my steampunk versions of various characters. My steampunk Rowena Ravenclaw is definitely what I'm known for. I actually entered that in the cosplay competition here last year and got second in the movies and television category. I've also been a guest at various steampunk events and panelist at DragonCon. I have been doing this for roughly 15 plus years. Yeah, and I, well, now actually my day job is myself, so.
All right, so a lot of us think that cosplay started when the term cosplay started to go around the internet and reach America, but long before then people were dressing up in costumes. If you dig through your history of science fiction conventions and world fairs, you will find that there are people who dressed up in costumes, not as a performer, but just as fans, going way back to the 1930s. So here's a few shots of a couple of them, and Steve is going to tell us about some of these people and the history of cosplay way back in the early 20th century.
Hi, okay, so first of all, let's stop and think about what cosplay is as far as we know. There's considerable difference between just showing up to a fancy dress ball, whatever. But what I think really separates cosplay from just ordinary, you know, costumery or whatever, would be its connection to whatever is out there in the popular media. And let's face it, I'm looking out here and I see people who are dressed up in outfits from film, television, gaming, you name it. So it's that pop culture connection. And that goes as far back as at least the 30s, but in terms of actual photographic evidence, what we have here, the first photo, are any of you familiar with Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine? All right, so you know who Forrest K. Ackerman is?
Uncle
Forrest. So for those who don't know who Forrest K. Ackerman was, he was the guy who started Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, which basically was the go-to place for those of us who are monster kids to learn everything about monster culture, sci-fi culture, that kind of stuff. But Forry was, in my opinion, the original hardcore geek badass. This guy was no joke. Loved and respected all the genres. And that photo is of him from a 1939, I believe it is, convention, early convention of science fiction having to do with, you know, what were then, you know, the pulp magazines, things like that. And here he is dressed up as a futuristic character of not necessarily from anything, but it's just him going with his interest in the genre and therefore coming up with his own thing. I mean, what's not to like about that? Sheer creativity fostered by creativity, which is wonderful to see. And next to that, we have from a bit, well, actually, no, let's go below. That Superman there is Superman from obviously way back in the days. And as you all know, Superman showed up originally in 1938, and within virtually no time became a pop culture phenomenon. And that's, I can't overstate it. But long story short, that's the actor who was hired to play Superman at the 1940 World's Fair. So it goes back that far, but even though he was a hired participant, let's face it, that is, in my opinion, a piece of cosplay. It's a good costume, first of all, especially for the era. You got your original S-shield. I mean, what is not to love about the simplicity of this design? Which, okay, let me grouse for a moment here. We've all seen Man of Steel, yes?
Yes.
Note that.
Yes.
Okay. To those of you who do cosplay and make your own costumes, you can design them. What was the main design flaw in Superman's gear in that movie?
The under?
Not the X. Nope. Thank you. Right there. Basically, look at the outfit he's got on now. It's all blue except for the cape and the boots, all right? You need the red panties to break up all of that blue. Just a simple design. Excuse me. I've been moved. So we move it a little bit further on into the top middle. We have Ming the Merciless and Maleficent, and I believe that shot is from the 1960s or thereabouts. Just below that, we have one from the 1940s, which is the woman in question. She's cosplaying a character who is, as far as I know, not necessarily named, but she was one of the cover images from an issue of Planet Stories, which was a science fiction pulp back in the days. And of course, she was replete with the expected half-naked women in outer space floating around, you know, no spacesuit or anything, but they did have a key. And now, okay, this one's going to be kind of a surprise. Any of you out there big comics fans, like 60s comics?
You know? I know who that guy is.
You know. Okay, there was a group called the Thunder Agents, and the character in question, that's No Man. I'm not going to try to explain it, it's a little bit complicated. But the interesting thing about this is that the shot from the 1960s at some convention, the person cosplaying him, that's none other than Marv Wolfman, who would later go on to write the classic Tomb of Dracula for Marvel Comics in the 70s, and then later co-create the new Teen Titans with George Perez. So, geekery begets geekery.
Wait, we're just seeing this now?
Well, I actually submitted another photo. I've got one of his Aquaman from the 60s.
Okay.
Seriously.
Wow.
But at last, and definitely not least, stop and think about the logistics of pulling this off even back in the 70s. We have here a person as a Tharp, one of the Green Men from Edgar Rice Burroughs' Barson books. Did any of you ever see the John Carter movie?
Yeah.
There you go. And imagine pulling that outfit, especially of that quality, pulling that off back in the 70s? Seriously, that's nothing less than breathtaking. In my opinion, for something of the 70s, that's as good as that guy who was running around yesterday in the Hulkbuster outfit. Did you guys see that?
No.
I mean, bloody hell! So, long story short, this stuff's been around for a long time. Thankfully, it's not going anywhere, and if anything, you know, there have been people who complain about how cosplay is going to be co-opted by the media corporations and whatever else. But stop and think about it. The imagination is in the hands of the people. Yes, we are getting things filtered to us through television, movies, the internet, gaming, you name it. But those of you out there rocking the outfits, you are bringing this to life. You are showing your love and interest in this media. Okay? So you guys, the ones who are out there, represent it. Okay? So don't let anyone tell you it's all been co-opted and taken away by the man. You guys are the foot soldiers. You're the ones who are making this a viable concern, okay? So take yourself seriously and take pride in what you do, all right? Anyone tells you you're geek, wear that geekness with pride.
Yeah. So, human culture has always had fancy dress balls and mask balls. Even the opera Deflator Mouse is about a cosplayer that gets trapped in the streets in his Batman outfit. What are your thoughts on the rudimentary origins of people who love fictional characters and dress them up?
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's sartorial fandom. Sartorial is really one of my favorite words. Right?
What was always the thing with Ring of the Saurus?
So apparel has to do with clothes, or clothing and apparel, and we are a species and a culture who likes to show off our plumage. And I mean, I see a lot of people in costume, and I could go around the room, which we don't have time to do, but I could go around the room and I could ask each of you why you were compelled to dress as that particular character. And I'd probably get a different answer from a lot of you, but it usually boils down to the same top five. I mean, it's, I love this and that person so much that I must wear it on my body to express my love, and also to, that's as close as I'm gonna get to being blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, everyone in this room who's wearing a costume has felt that compulsion. That's why you go through the trouble, that's why you do it. So it just becomes, almost like a need. It becomes an expression to express that. Sorry. Okay, I won't use it anymore.
I don't know. I'm going to come at this from a different angle, because of course we could talk about like the greater history of costume dress in human culture and go back to like early Sherlock reenactment societies back in the day of like Arthur Conan Doyle. But I actually think that photo on the top left there, it's taken in New York City. It's at WorldCon 1939, which I personally feel is like the first real convention. There was a meeting previously in 1938 at someone's house, which they declared to be the first convention of science fiction fans. But with that group of people who then put on WorldCon the next year. But I think that was the moment. And once that happened, every WorldCon after that, it continued and it evolved in that culture. And so I think that sort of fandom and conventions grew up sort of simultaneously with cosplay. And then later on, there was sort of a schism between WorldCon and, you know, like dressing up and stuff. And we can get into that in the later period. But I think that it was like this moment of genesis where fans came together for the first time and costuming happened for the first time.
A lot of us do it for different reasons. I mean, there's being a character, but there's also a certain creative aspect of just enjoying designing and creating costumes. Like I specialize in doing my own commercials, and for me, that's creative outlet. I don't identify the character. That's just not something that's really my thing. I tend to pick characters instead that their personalities tend to be somewhat similar to mine. So that, you know, people will say, like, oh, no, it's just my personality kind of fits the way you think that character should be.
Now, by the time the 70s rolled around, there were a couple of very specific subcultures that were built entirely around obsessive fans that loved one particular thing so much that they had to dress up as the characters and all get together for specific events devoted to that. Pat, why don't you tell us about Froggy Horror and Dragons?
Somebody down front said it before we even got there. It's true. Y'all know, I see some really young people. Y'all know about, right? I have to give some basic background on the Rocky Horror phenomenon. Okay, so it's this cheesy movie, right? So it's this cheesy movie, right? And people just got a crush on it and started going to midnight showings of it every week. And because it's cheesy, this is like the Reader's Digest version, but people started, because they went every week, they started yelling smart alecky things back to the screen, which we're not going to give an example of. Things specific to characters or whatever. And that was step one, exactly. That was step one where you would incorporate it. The fans just started to think they took it and began to make it an inclusive experience. And that was step one, the calling back to the screen. And then step two was somebody showed up dressed up as one of the characters. And everyone went, oh my God. And then more people started to do that. And then the next thing to do, the logical progression, was to get up in costume in front of the screen and act it out along with the movie in what we call a shadow cast. And you know, that's the basics of what is Rocky Horror. That's a whole, beyond that is a whole other panel.
And the makers of the movie did not intend for it to be a sing-along with audience participation. They were just making a movie to be passive.
And it became better. Watch it without, and I have a few times. You're like, really? Okay. All right. And for me at least, that's what started the. Because Alita is absolutely right. There are different schools of thought with cosplayers. There are some who will look down their nose at you if you're not in character all day. I am not one of those people. Beyond the hell of screaming, don't ask me. I just can't. And so there's that, and then there's the people who are in it for the, that's an amazing outfit, oh my God, that's an amazing outfit, I love it so much. And if you are at all craft-minded, you're going to eventually figure out how to make the thing, and then you need somewhere to wear it. You've made the thing. You have to do something with it. So, I mean, now we have the internet, we don't have to leave the house, but... But, you know, it got to, like, Rocky Horror was what, for me at least, started with that. Also because you were up in your, you weren't doing an interpretation. You were trying to look like what was on the screen. That's what, how many of you have gotten really annoyed by people saying, well, that's not a screen actor. That's not the screen actor. That's not the essay version.
It's working in the wrong direction.
Look, I like my screen actor River Song clothes as much as the next person. I really do. Yay, All Saints. But for me, screen accurate should mean it looks like the thing that's on the screen. And if you sew well enough to make something that looks exactly like the thing that's on the screen, I'm gonna respect you a lot more than I am me, because all my screen actor River Song stuff shows about me as a is that I have a credit card and questionable judgment. So any of you who have all things or not the store-bought thing, please don't feel bad. I love you. Anyway,
back in the 70s when the first Star Trek conventions were coming
yes.
up, you might be able to go to a toy store and buy a tiny replica face or a tricorder.
They weren't that tiny back then.
Oh. All right. So Steve, actually tell us a little bit about the Trekkie movement and the old-time toys. How are they different from what we have now?
Well, back in the days, I mean, when Star Trek first, surprisingly, when Star Trek and other sci-fi shows that are now considered classics came out, a lot of them, the toys that they made, the companies would just throw a label for the show onto whatever given item you might have. You didn't really get quality Star Trek toys until about the mid-70s, let's say around like 74, 75. And the phasers that they made back then, they were huge and ugly. What you know them to look like on the show, imagine that on steroids, with considerably less visual appeal. So you have that going. Same thing goes with what they did with the communicators. They were too huge. Did anyone out there have anything? But yes, I'm 50 years old, so I'll admit
no, it.
They were just crappy toys, but they were huge.
The other thing about Star Trek, and that's those were my first cons because those were the ones that were around. You know, I mean, my first organized fandom was probably Star Trek: The Next Generation, and you know, like, yeah, I had a uniform, but I didn't get any sort of. There wasn't the compulsion to wear that, especially for women. In
you painted yourself green. You know? And none of these things blew my skirt up. Especially since a lot of those skirts were really that short, and if you take anything, you know, nothing to flow that skirt. I think they weren't fun. But so you start, you know, there weren't a lot of, as I recall, from going to like creation cons back in the day, they were all Star Trek based, and you had your people, the Klingons and the uniforms, but there wasn't much else, because there wasn't much else. You know, and it was always sad.
She's right. I went to, what is it, I forget where it was, I went to what was then the biggest Star Trek convention at the time, 40 years ago. Okay, you go into that, she's right, there were absolutely no outfits for the women to wear. We saw Starfleet uniforms, and that was about it. You know, kind of the green came to work. I did have, there was one woman who dressed up as that famous Romulan commander who didn't even have a name in the script. But, yeah, no, she's absolutely right. And it's good to see that the later Star Trek fandom allowed for so many more choices.
So, Anna, I believe the thoughts on...
Wait, can I jump in here? Because this is actually an interesting thing. We sort of skimmed it over, but I don't know if you want to talk about it, but this is about the time of the schism, just like a little bit earlier, where costuming in some ways really like caused the fragmentation, I think, of the community back in the day. I mean, this is partly personal opinion.
Well, tell us a little bit about the schism.
There was WorldCon, which was the first convention, which is like the father of all fandom today. And WorldCon attendees were aging, I think is really the truth. They were getting a little older by the time they hit the 60s and 70s. They'd been doing this for 20 years. And there was an explosion of non-book media, I think, in the late 60s and early 70s. And so all of these younger people who were being introduced to fantasy and speculative fiction through sources that were not books were showing up. And I think it was a little bit...
versus multimedia based.
There was some sensitivity there. And I understand, like I'm sure you've all been at a convention, if you are older and there are younger people doing a thing that you don't understand and they're being loud about it, where you might have a moment. Right.
That's me with the video game when I first got started. Oh, I was a total baby. I'm the first.
So there's all kinds of things that go on. So I think that fandom is generational in some ways. And sometimes it's difficult for the older generation as they age to be sympathetic to the younger generation, to be sympathetic to that 15-year-old who is screaming something and you don't know what it is. And why are they doing that? And they're proud of you. And like, it wasn't like this. And so I think that there was a moment there, and I think that moment was Logan's Run. They had the runner. So,
For those of you that don't know the plot, in the movie, it's everyone is euthanized at 30, and in the book that it's based on, everyone is euthanized at 21. So it's about people that want to grow up to be middle-aged, fleeing from the society of the young.
So this thing used to happen at conventions. Where this kid would come around a corner and they'd scream run, and everyone like would just start running. That was their moment. They'd all be like, they'd have these like little stupid things on their hands.
The fire marshal would love that.
And they'd just take off. And like, so this crowd of people would just start running through this crowded space, or out of this crowded space, depending on what direction the pack was moving. We'll call them.
They were just like, they're a faucet. I'm okay with that.
For you younger audience members, Farrah Fawcett was
the
first.
Is super, super
into
season, so look up that image of her on the skateboard and speculate that you will be so on trend.
Feathered
right
hair. Yeah. She is the whole reason for the feathered hair.
She really is.
Bullet for feathered hair.
So, Hannah, while you're on the mic. So could you tell us a little bit about how in the 70s there was a different viewpoint of publisher relations.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cosplayers at the time. Can we
flip over the image?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Over to,
so, wait, I want to tell you guys a story about back before when we were all born, and the year is 1973. So back in the ancient days.
Also, virtualization, and the apparently very long-running idea of cosplay rivalry among cosplayers.
Okay. The very first, I didn't start to get like really into going to cons in costume, like I said, Star Trek was not a thing. Until my son told Cena. Cena happened in the early 90s.
Awesome.
Cena was extra accuracy. You had to build all that yourself. Right. So, and I didn't dress up as Xena. I wanted to be Gabrielle.
Nice.
And I loved it. Wonderful, and my very first con appearance, I worked my little butt off. I didn't have half the skills that I have now, which are still gone. I'm still not half the skills that it has. And I get there, and the first person I clap eyes on is a girl wearing the exact same costume. And I bounced up to her, and I was immediately like, another Gabrielle! Yay! Moms, bonding! Let's bond over how we made our costumes! And I went, hi, you look fabulous! And I got this. Yeah, you look fabulous too. I seriously almost left. I wouldn't be here talking to you. Okay, like she almost nipped my cosplay, my budding cosplay desires completely. We later became friends, and I was like, dude, you were so nasty to me. Oh my god, I'm sorry. So you know, I absolutely. It's horrible and it's awful. And again, it's fandom. We are all nerds in a costume. We are wearing our fandom on our bodies and should get over ourselves.
Word.
That said, as far as, you know, Vampirella, what is a drawing? So, you know, having somebody dressed up as her, having an actual human, is kind of cool. I'm, for those of you who are not familiar with American Horror Story Freak Show, I'm dressed up as Jessica Lange's character from that, okay. I would not sign photos of Elsa Mars, this is just me. I would not sign, because it's played by an actress who exists.
I feel like at that time there was sort of a weird back and forth where both of these girls would go on to model for the artist drawing Vampirella. The first
15, you said.
Yeah. She's actually standing next to the creator here. She did a full tour with him as Vampirella for several seasons of conventions.
I don't actually want to see where the creator owns Vampirella. Sorry, that's
when I was making this montage, my wife looked at my computer and said, who's the pedophile?
it's a complicated space. I don't know if it was just a different time or like I'm not gonna judge what our grandparents were doing.
Just be fair, my 10-year-old wanted to wear my magenta costume. And I let her. I let her, and I mean I did not stuff the bust, which is the only part where it didn't fit. And so to be fair, but there's a difference between the
gender. If I can make a slight divergent here, well, not really a divergent, but it's about Heidi. Okay, like I mentioned earlier, I was a kid when the whole Heidi Saha thing happened, okay? And I'm sure you're aware, Warren Publishing, when they came out with the whole Heidi Saha thing, they milked the crap out of that. They tried to turn her into the next pinup superstar. You can look at the back of their magazine and there were ads for Heidi Saha poster, Heidi Saha fan magazine. Meanwhile, there were those of us who were like, who the hell is Heidi Saha? First of all, unless you were in on the convention cosplay circuit, you have no idea who she was. Literally, she did not exist outside of that very specific sphere, no matter how hard they tried to push her. And then, once all of this came out, she was only 15 years old, it got super creepy to those of us who were just observing from the outside. It was really quite repellent.
Was it uncomfortable? Because she was at that point doing, like by the time she's 15 there, she didn't sign until she was 16, so the following season she did her two turns.
Right.
Was it weird to meet a 16-year-old man?
girl. I saw her when she was rocking the whole Jungle Girl look.
Okay, yeah, yeah, later.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of sexually aggressive for her.
Incredibly so for her. You saw the magazines, the way it was photographed, you really had no frame of reference as to her actual legal age, all right? But if you saw her live, you're like, that's my babysitter. And it was really creepy. Like, you know, I go home the following weekend, and like, my babysitter Gina, who was 16 years old, I'm sitting there in my 8-year-old head picturing her in a Jungle Girl outfit. I'm like, this is really disturbing.
Wait, so then come back and be like, this is like some really, this was like ongoing drama. Everything used to happen a lot slower because there was no internet. So people were like passing back and forth fan magazines and like old mimeographs. So 2 years after she did this appearance, a year after she started professionally being Vampirella for money, someone wrote a poem about her, let's call it that. They're sort of, this is like before the term film came out, it was sort of indicating Stairway to Heaven, in which they had found a very young-looking adult entertainer who really was a dead ringer for Heidi. And they handed out a mimeograph of this poem and that image of this younger, but I'm guessing if she was working as an adult entertainer, just over the line, legally available. And so they passed on this mimeograph at conventions, and this led to an extremely violent confrontation between Heidi's father and some of the gentlemen in early fan magazines, in which he apparently screamed, "That's not my daughter," punched the guy, and then threw him up against the wall until some dudes had to remove both of them from that.
And for those of you too young to have any idea what the hell a mimeogram is, if you ever saw a mimeogram, even back in those days, seeing something printed on that, it just made it look that much sleazier. It really did. So, Dad, I'm touching about you.
Attention back onto publisher relations. Any final thoughts on
So the year after they did this with Vampirella, Marvel did it actually. This is sort of a weird one. Got a Playboy model playmate, I guess. Got a Playboy playmate to come down and start modeling for them as Spider-Woman. They introduced Spider-Woman. This particular costume change of Spider-Woman, I guess.
With the original?
Yeah.
It's
not up there.
We don't have that.
Yeah. So the year after 1969, with the first Vampirella model, Marvel pulled the same trick with Spider-Woman. And she was apparently so enamored of coming into the studio and posing for the artist that she agreed to have a costume commission and started doing. Which ended up being another set of tension because she was not originally a fan.
She's a fake mean girl.
There we go. So 1970, very first accusation of fake mean girl, spurned by publishers investing money in cosplay. So well, it's just like an ongoing tumultuous relationship. But unfortunately, she couldn't be with here with us tonight. But Yaya, if you look at Scarlet Witch statues, there is a Scarlet Witch statue that looks a lot like her for the reason that she was the cosplay model for that statue, for that original art piece. So that's like something that still continues. There's still lots of artists who are drawing from cosplayers and cosplayers.
One brief thing. This is the younger crowd that really asked you. Do all you know who Red Sonja was? Barbarian female hero in the stereotypical chainmail bikini. Okay, see the middle photo here? Okay, this little photo, that's an appearance of Red Sonja on the Mike Douglas show. Yes, that's Jamie Farr from MASH. But here's the interesting
thing. Jamie Farr used to be famous about 40 years ago.
Got any questions out there? Okay.
Wendy.
That is Wendy Peeney herself that has read something back in the day. She used to go to conventions as Red Sonja, and she's kicked butt at it. She was terrific. And Savage Sword Company even did a whole profile of the different cosplay women who go around to conventions as Red Sonja. And the first place I ever heard of Wendy Peeney was as Red Sonja. So years later, when HealthQuest came out, I was like, that can't be the same woman writing the drawings. And sure enough, and to this day, I'm a slave to HealthQuest, so speak not ill of HealthQuest.
All right, so a little while ago, we mentioned the mimeographs and just how hard it was to print anything. There were no blogs. This was before videotape. This was when if you wanted to make a film, you had a reel-to-reel camera with a separate sound system. So now we all live in the distant future of 2015. So, Alita, can you tell us a little bit about the futuristic technology that you work on? Even though you do steampunk, you use elaborate electronics and materials that did not exist 20, 30, 40 years ago.
It didn't exist 10 years ago to where you could easily get your hands on it. Between internet allowing instant, you can find things so quickly, so easily, you can order them practically anywhere in the world. And if you have Amazon Prime, you can like ship in 2 days to free. This is, lights, everything, and all I had to do was on Amazon, fingernail polish over that for this pretty much the same effect. For like maybe $4.
Nail polish technology has soared in recent years, but in all honesty, and the magnetic nail polish where there's iron bits inside it, and it has a metallic sheen, so that's the sort of hobby-making materials that just a few years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do that with the products that were on the market.
Should we talk more about this stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think we're actually at a really fascinating almost event horizon in the development of cosplay technology. I'm really excited for Shapeways and Glowforge, our both 3D printing companies that I think in the next year or two are going to make it possible to have 3D printers in your home. Obviously, things like Tepicura have really like changed the way that we think about building armor and that's accessible to. Thermoplastics have made it possible for us to build on a scale that was never possible before. And just everything is moving so quickly. I think that it's just incredible. I mean, I think it's incredible what people were doing with what they had back then, but I think now new generations are going to really innovate in really interesting ways, and in ways that are harder for even me as an older generation person to imagine. You know, like you were mentioning, magnetic nail polish. Like, that's a technology that's still not totally there, but the ability to move pigment in a controlled way by controlling magnetism is not something that's really currently feasible on large scale, but will be feasible I think in the next 5 years. So you could have, let's say, a piece of armor that's heated and have moving magnets inside that are changing your armor as that's going on.
Obviously with LED or with LED, but some screen technology.
Yeah, has been
that well, but when you think about it, a lot of the technology that's coming out, because it's really early here where you've got the flexible screens, it's not that much further to get to fabric that could transmit imagery, in which case the sky's the limit of that.
Or if you guys have ever seen those change Rorschach tests where they breathe and breathing changes.
I remember an early version of that one. Well, I had one.
There we go.
I remember when that was fictional. The only thing that they wrote about Watchmen.
There we go.
I remember just the late 80s.
Yeah, where there was
color. What was it? Hyper color. I had one of the t-shirts.
And it's did that work as well as that mask works now? So it's moving so quickly that I think that especially the younger people in the audience, if you stick with this, you're going to see things that after we are all gone, that were just amazing in what's possible in costuming. And I think that what's important is that especially the younger people who are more, sensitive to technologies in your mind, is that you stay involved and you keep innovating. Because I think that having people who are coming in and doing this and bringing a fresh perspective is part of why it's changing as fast as it is. So keep it up, young folks.
While you're keeping it up, young folks, I think it's also very important to remember that it's not always, it doesn't have to be about, again, it's the fandom, it's the sartorial fandom, and it's not about the skill that you have or the budget that you have, it's about the love that you have. So the fact that you bought your 10th Doctor dress, I own one of those, I love those things. She bought her 10th Doctor dress at Hot Topic, or similar. And those are fantastic, and those are adorable, and those don't make you any less of a fan in any way at all than the guy who got a custom tailored suit and made his own coat or whatever. It's, if it is up your alley to build stuff and sew stuff and make stuff, or to give a bunch of advice, yay you. But that's not all that becomes, you're still a cosplayer. You're wearing a costume. It doesn't not count because it was mass produced or because it was simpler or because it was whatever.
a distant past, the idea of officially licensed merchandise didn't exist. The marketing companies and the merchandisers, they would make Halloween costumes on the most incredibly popular and topical characters. For the year that that product was, for the year that that movie was in stores, but they were deliberately bad quality. When I got my first infamous cat suit for my Catwoman outfit back in the early 90s, I had to go to a fetish boutique, which was, a little store. You had to know exactly where it was, and you go in, and that's where you would go to buy a skin-tight black vinyl cat suit.
And it was a really good suit.
A fun tangent on the cat suit is, and getting back to early publisher relations with cosplayers.
Oh my god, so who paid for your cat suit?
Oh no one paid for my cat suit. I was actually asked to leave I was asked to leave a convention by an unnamed publisher that owns the license to Catwoman. Because in the early 90s, they didn't want people doing their own take on a character. They wanted to have their professional actor hired to come into the con, who was the official representation of their character. And they could be hostile cosplayers.
Put it mildly.
Yes, mildly. So
it went one way, and then it went back the other once they started franchising that.
There's hostility among costume versus non-costume fans also. I've gotten such stink eye at cons because I was wearing a costume and expressing my fandom that way, as opposed to, some other way.
That's some intergenerational rule. That's a continuing thing. But I think that is why we have so many generations of fandom, is because eventually, the younger generation fans, I think, fourth generation at this point, so internet fans, like the young lady from stuff, and American cartoon media fans are going to be like, you know what? There we go. Are going to be like, we're tired of all these old people anime conventions. We're going to start our own convention. And they're going to make it work. And they'll go out and be an entirely new, not entirely new group. And then people will be like, why are there so many people dressed in gray clogging up pool filters? by swimming to remove their body paint, and now we have to pay this really huge hotel damages fee.
Alright, so we have 5 minutes left. Everyone, let me hear your final thoughts, and also let the audience know where they can find you throughout the weekend and what projects you have coming up. Leah?
So if you look for A Gift to Heart Alice, type that into Google, you will find my webpage, my Facebook, everything. Everything's up in the same name, so it's really easy. As for the things I'm working on, my next big project is going to be, I plan to do a steampunk synergy by Queen's Con. That's my next big project. So that's going to be very, very heavy lighting, sound.
Cyber stalk you or find you your life.
So I'm Anna Fisher. Fisher has a C in it, and my SEO is really good. So you can just Google that. You're totally lost. But also you can find my Facebook page at Anna Cosplay Photography. My next thing that I'm doing, I guess, is Anime USA is Halloween weekend. I'll be guesting there. So if you're in the DC area, come by and say hello.
You can find me online as Miss Nerd Styles, either with a hyphen or without a hyphen. If you type Miss Nerd Styles into Google, it'll be or my card, so I'll just give you one. I will be playing some music and being ridiculous on the ukulele at the way station. Those of you who are on the internet, make cards, so don't be trying to sneak in. A week from tomorrow for our fourth annual Fest. And
Every day of the month, I'm reviewing and discussing in graphic detail classic horror movies and not so classic horror movies. But I'm giving you a warning, both of those blogs are technically speaking hard art and content. They're not pornography by any means, but I do discuss things candidly. So go into it with an open mind and use discretion.
And I'm Charles Battersby. You can find me at charlesbattersby.com or on Twitter at charlesbattersby with no Y on the end. I host the GNN podcast on ShoddyCast every Thursday, and I write the ShoddyCast Fallout Lore series, new episodes every Friday. And I will be walking around tomorrow dressed as Elizabeth from BioShock if she opened a tear into the Fallout universe. So keep an eye out. All right, and we have maybe 30 seconds. If someone throws their hand in the air and barks, one question, you.
All right, you said before about costume fan versus uncostume fan, and I've been going to conventions for quite some time, and I noticed that the only time I've really seen, you know, there be tension is when uncostume fans see fans of another fandom and say, oh, how can you be a fan of that? Like, do you think that has an ability, or do you think that's just my own observation?
All right,
we've
just been out of time, so, fuck.
Fans get rivals, they get... Oh my god, you like that? You don't like the same things that I do? What the hell? And when you're in a costume, you're wearing that fandom out there for everybody to see. So of course it's gonna be more.
All right.
In your tribal war.